Fantasy freaks and geeks, what's up? You're listening to the NFL Fantasy Live podcast. Your host here, James Coe. We got a different cast of characters. No Alex Gelhar. No Adam Rank. So the A's are out of the building in their stead. We've got analytics expert Cynthia Freeland. Free, what's up?
How are you?
I'm doing wonderful. It's great to have you on the podcast again.
Thank you so much for having me. I love the music. It's, you know, it's my favorite music. I dance to it every time.
The hardcore trance trap music is gets you in the mood for fantasy.
Well, whenever, you know, when Marcus knows when I'm sitting next to him and we're getting ready. It's so cold in the studio when we do Fantasy Live,
right.
So I have to dance to the open music to keep warm. They take my blanket away.
So, yeah, trade secret, Cynthia actually has a blanket that she wraps up in.
Legit.
She wraps up in before we start.
I get really sad when I don't have it.
This is my question. Is it like is it actually the Cynthia Freeland blankie?
Yeah,
or
I brought
is it,
it from
a
home.
Oh, okay. I was wondering if it was like company provided.
No,
or...
I don't know. Work for, like, we're not players. We're just here.
So you brought that from home.
Yep.
The blankie.
Yeah.
That is awesome.
Yeah. No, it's a great blanket.
I love it. I absolutely love it. Of course, MG, my guy, Marcus Grant. What's up?
What's going on, man? I know this is a fantasy football podcast, but
yes,
man, I'm excited. The baseball season's back again.
Yes, me too. I love baseball.
Like, this is always,
this is like a really good time.
It's a really good time of year. It's like, you know, I always enjoy this time of year because, you know, I'm sitting at my desk.
Yes.
And I'm usually grinding on like the draft kit or something.
Yep.
Else. It is, you know, it is the fantasy version of sausage making. It's useful, but it is a grind. But at the same time, like, I always have, you know, early season baseball, especially when there are day games on, have them on my TV. It's either that or I've been watching old episodes of Samurai Jack. That's what gets me through the day.
Right. Okay. Now we have baseball. Yes. And hockey and basketball. We're talking about the draft. I mean, this is a great time.
It's a good
golf.
Time, yeah.
Sure.
We've got golf
college,
tomorrow.
College hoops just
good
wrapped
golf.
Up.
Yeah, I know. Sure. We are missing college hoops, which I do love. But we still have, like, NBA starts to get interesting now.
Yeah, for sure. The 82-game schedule comes down, and now we're getting to the playoffs, which is basically
Season two.
It's another 2 months of NBA. Let's
totally.
Get ready. Ryan Bartlett behind the glass.
Yay.
Not Alex Gilhar. Not the whiz kid from Wisconsin. We got Ryan Bartlett. What's up, man?
What's going on? Thanks for letting me sit in.
Yeah.
All right. Let's start the show. Well, we got a big-time show in front of us here today. We're going to be talking to the late-round QB himself, J.J. Zacharyson from NumberFire. We're going to be talking about Rex Burkhead, Brandon Cooks, talking about Jared Goff. Why does he hate Jared Goff? I'm going to ask J.J. Zacharyson why he hates my man from
with a Twitter handle like his. I bet he has a great answer to that.
I bet he would. And then we're going to close out with a round of daily daps, but we start the show as we always do with your top headlines.
The camera highlights in the world of sports.
Breaking news.
Breaking news.
Breaking news.
Breaking news.
Whistles go woo!
I like turtles.
We continue to follow breaking news.
Watch the news because I'm a kid.
So y'all need to hide your kids, hide your wife.
We'll start in Oaktown. Marshawn. He was seen at the Raiders facility today. It was news broken by punter Pat McAfee. Oh, I should say former punter
Pat McAfee.
Pat McAfee. What's he with now? Barstool Sports?
Yes.
Barstool?
Correct.
All right. So it is a quote-unquote fact-finding mission. Marshawn is 30. I don't know what it all means. We'll go to the Yay Area native himself, MG my guy Marcus Grant.
I mean, you know, it could just be, you know, the Raiders are in Oakland. Marshawn lives in Oakland. He might have just stopped by just to say what's up. For whatever reason.
What kind of facts is he going to find on this mission?
I mean, I think
do you think he like writes it down in like a little book, the facts that he finds?
That's a good question. I would love to read what's in Marshawn.
I know,
which
me
is
too.
Like
a little fact
diary,
book.
Right? His little fact book. I think it's probably, you know, they're trying to figure out, you know, kind of salary issues and, you know, what Marshawn would want.
Okay.
And, you know, kind of, you know, what, talking about what his role potentially would be. Because I think here's the thing. If he does come out of retirement, and he plays for the Raiders, which I guess the story is that's the only team he would come out of retirement to play for.
Right.
You know, I don't know that you suddenly just turn your running game completely over to a 30-year-old back who was admittedly – who has taken a year off. And
fresh legs,
was,
dude.
Was slowing down the last time we saw him play. When you've got two young guys that they seem to like in Jalen Richard and DeAndre Washington. So I think there is a little bit of, hey, yeah, you know, beast mode, we'd love to have you come in here and be a part of what we do.
Right.
Understand, though, that you will have to defer a little bit to these young guys that we want to get on the field.
I think it'd sell tickets, though.
Absolutely sells
like,
tickets.
I mean, if you got Marshawn Lynch, I think that would – I mean, Raiders fans would be
See, well, here's the thing.
Psyched.
Low key, I do think there's a little bit of PR involved in this because you just ripped the heart out of your fan base like a week or two ago.
And they still have to be in Oaktown.
And they still got, hey, we're moving in with this new person, but can we crash on your couch until we get everything set up?
For the next 2 years.
Right. So so why not bring in Oakland's favorite son to kind of smooth that over
a little
bit? That's
true. I mean, it's not a – not it's not,
not a crazy idea.
And also the Skittles would show up really well against the uniforms because the bright colors of the Skittles are really juxtaposed
the black
to
jerseys.
The black and
I think that would be a big fact that he finds
in his little fact book.
You know what? That's pretty smart. I like that call. We'll stay with running backs. We'll stay with aging running backs. We'll talk about Adrian Peterson. He was hosted by the Patriots, but he left without a contract. A lot of insiders are saying this was more of a favor to Peterson's agent than it was to Peterson. You know what? At this point, I'm not exactly sure what the market is for Adrian Peterson. The upside certainly is enticing, but that being said, he's coming off of a couple of serious injuries. He's on the wrong side of 30, obviously. And quite frankly, I don't see him getting signed before the draft. I mean, I think the draft will determine where a lot of these, you know, aging running backs, including Marshawn Lynch, including Adrian Peterson, including Jamal Charles, where these guys go. But I would be shocked to see any one of these guys signed before the draft.
So I kind of think this is smart, right? If you set your price too high, you're going to now, like, I believe that he's probably, if he's saying I only want $2 million, a team would have snapped him up already. Mm-hmm. But if whatever price, you know, he's rumored to be offering, and it's likely too high for whatever team, right?
Right.
Supply, demand, right? So I think it's kind of smart to, like, overstate your market value, because then once you have drafted and, uh-oh, we didn't get the running back we thought, or, uh-oh, we're 2 weeks into training camp and this kid is not who this isn't working out, or there's some injury or something, then you've now created a really nice backstop for yourself.
Sure.
Because you've set your price really high. So I don't necessarily think it's a bad strategy. I think it's probably a little nerve-wracking for him. But apart from that, I don't think it's strategy-wise, I think, you know, as long as you're comfortable doing that, and a guy like, I think he's probably made enough money where he's, you know, like, okay, well, I don't want to do it for my real floor is here, right? But I'm going to set it up there because
why not?
Get what I can get for it.
Right, yeah. I am curious about what exactly he's demanding salary-wise. I know he put something out on social media like a week or two ago saying that, you know, people were getting all his numbers wrong and what have you.
Right, that's why I'm not pretending. You know,
right.
But I would imagine if you said you want Marshawn Lynch for $2 million, yes or no now, Detroit Lions, yep.
Yep.
100%.
But I do think with Adrian Peterson, you know, whatever his salary demands are,
yeah,
the Patriots are always going to be below his floor. I mean, like, you see what they did with LeGarrette Blount, who had a great year, obviously,
yeah.
But look, Adrian Peterson walks through those doors with a couple of knee injuries, you know, 30-some-odd years old, not having, you know, played the best football the last couple of years. The Patriots are going to offer him a six-pack of Sam Adams and a dozen from Duncan. That's all he was going to get from them. So,
well, and the quote-unquote chance to win.
That's it. I mean,
I think they were selling, probably trying to sell him.
Which I'm sure is a big deal for him after spending his years in Minnesota and not really ever having a legit chance at winning.
Why not?
I'm sure it's a big deal. But, you know, in terms of salary, whatever it was he was asking for, the Patriots were always going to be below that.
I would imagine, and this is just total speculation, I would imagine that he's asking for anything between $6.5 to $8 million.
And that's not happening.
No.
He's going to have a hard time finding that anywhere.
Oh, yeah. But again, you know what? Cynthia brought up a great point, though. I think Adrian Peterson will absolutely play in the NFL in 2017.
Yeah.
But it might not be till after training camp, where somebody gets injured, maybe somebody high profile gets injured in a preseason game. Okay, all of a sudden, AP's phone is ringing up, you know? So, that's an interesting point. He might not even get drafted when training camp comes around, but I can almost guarantee you Adrian Peterson will play.
And all those rumors about him, I mean, you've never heard anyone say that Adrian Peterson's come out of shape. He's gotten hurt, but apart from being hurt, he's always been, you know, you always hear those rumors that he's the, you know, lifting,
he's game ready.
Always game ready. Yep. So I don't, you know, it's not like you're having a situation where he's 40 pounds heavier than people think.
Speaking of guys who are 40 pounds heavier than was anticipated, Leonard Fournette apparently dropped 12 pounds between the combine and his pro day. That's about a month's time. The LSU back checked back in at a very svelte 228 pounds. If he was 228 at the combine and he still ran that 4.51, people would have been absolutely goo-goo gaga over this guy. He didn't do any of the other drills, but checking in at 228, that's nice.
Yeah. I mean, as long as dude still runs like a runaway freight train, I think it's fine. I mean, that is the big part of his appeal. Now, I don't know, maybe dropping the weight adds some agility. The one thing you notice when you watch Leonard Fournette's tape is obviously he runs guys over. He's not making a lot of people miss. But when you run the way he does, you don't necessarily have to. But I don't know. Maybe this adds a little more agility. Maybe he has a few more juke moves or something now.
I just think this makes it a little more annoying for everyone listening to draft analysis, because now we're thinking he's so athletic. But he was athletic before. Like, I get that it's a 12-pound difference, and people were saying he came
that's
heavy.
That's big.
Not really. It's not. Oh, it's like not even 5% of his body weight.
Okay, that's fine. But again, in terms of the NFL, that's big. I mean, that is big.
All this is going to do is just shuffle the running back deck one more time before the draft.
I think Leonard Fournette, for real scouts, not people who talk about it on TV, that's me. For real scouts, he's already put it on tape. Dropping 12 pounds for.
Oh, and we've been watching for years now, so it's right. We know what we're gonna get.
It's not like they're like suddenly, you know what? I think he's now going to be a totally different dude.
It's not so much that, but, we talk about running backs with weight issues. Of course, you're going to start thinking about guys like Eddie Lacy.
Had to bring it back to Eddie Lacy.
No, listen, but it's a real thing. I mean, that is a real – if this guy checks in at 240 at the combine, who's to say when he comes in after signing a big contract he doesn't come in at 250 as a rookie?
But, were you training speed or were you training strength? What were you focusing on in the offseason? Because I don't think it was eating donuts. He knew he was going to the combine. He knew what he would weigh in at. He knew what he was going to run. None of these things are unknowns. I don't think – maybe John Ross surprised himself by running a little faster than he thought.
Sure.
But he knew he was going to be a burner. He almost won an island for it. There's precedent there for – you kind of know where you're going to be, right? So, to me – I think it's already there, and maybe it shuffles it, but probably not. I don't think you're gonna have people in real draft rooms and real teams saying, you know what, this kid was able to lose 12 pounds in a month.
It's not the overall number. To me, it is a question of work ethic. It's a question of, does this guy have a weight issue at all? Those questions will be in draft rooms. I can guarantee you that.
But no matter what, they're gonna say this is LSU, and this is what happened when they played Alabama, and this is what happened when they played Ole Miss. This is what happened in these situations.
Sure.
And remember, an injury, post-injury, he's not – it's kind of unfair because he had an injury, so now, what do you want him to do? Do you want him to be strong and way more? Do you want to be they're already – I don't know. To me, you're right, but I don't think that this 12 – it's cool, it's great, but we're just going to add the adjective – athletic now, as opposed to before, we were like, oh, maybe he's a little Chubba Wubba.
Hey,
Chubba Wubba.
Hey, we still have, 3.5 weeks till the draft.
Maybe he could get down to 222.
It's gonna get wilder. We still have 3.5 weeks till the draft.
I love it. Mike McCarthy, we'll stay with running backs. Mike McCarthy told reporters that he believes Ty Montgomery has the ability to be the full-time lead back in Green Bay. I'll ask the room this. Just lip service, or do you believe that?
He said he has the ability.
Right, that's exactly where I was going. Not that he's going to be the lead back. He just has the ability to it.
5.9 yards per carry on just 77 carries. Montgomery never rushed for more than 16 carries in a ball game. Although when he did run 16 times, it was a 162 yard effort, 2-touchdown game versus Chicago in Week 15. I'll ask you guys: do you think that Ty Montgomery has it in him to be a full time lead workhorse guy?
No, I think he's a nice piece. I think he's a committee back. But we talk about teams not making moves at running back until after the draft.
Yeah.
I think you include the Packers in that too. I mean,
interesting.
There's a chance they go out and try to get somebody in this draft. I mean, who knows? Maybe they land a Christian McCaffrey or something, and that completely changes the dynamic of what they do in that offense.
Such a deep defensive draft, though, and they need so many defensive players.
I mean, they picked up Martellus Bennett. That's going to change a lot of things, right?
Okay.
Like those short passes. Maybe Ty Montgomery now is, I think I totally agree with you about being a part of a committee. Maybe he's the lead back, but the lead in of two or three or, some committee that is just structured a little differently than we are used to out of, Green Bay. So I don't know. I think, sure, he has it in him, and sure, they don't know what they're going to do yet. They've got this new piece. They've got the new part of their offense that they don't know exactly how. I'm sure Mike McCarthy has it in his head how he wants to use Martellus Bennett, but they haven't worked together yet. They haven't installed their offense yet. I think anything's possible at this point.
Ty Montgomery, a converted wide receiver. How about we go the other way? Bruce Arians told reporters recently that former running back Andre Ellington will convert to wide receiver next year. Considering no Michael Floyd and aging Larry Fitzgerald, Cynthia, what are your thoughts on potentially seeing Andre Ellington out there as, you know, kind of split out wide?
Good for him. I mean, find a way to use someone who he's not going to win that job. I mean,
the running back job.
Correct.
Yep.
I mean, we got this guy here. I know Marcus has.
No matter what.
Oh, no matter what.
DJ,
no matter what, baby. No matter
what. So, you know, you're not going to be the lead. This gives him an opportunity to be useful in an offense that has a lot of different options.
Yeah.
So, to me, I'm like, that's great. I think that says more about Bruce Arians and his ability to take the assets on his team and really work with them. It says a lot about him as a coach and try, instead of being like, yeah, whatever, we'll fill this in with some wide receiver in the draft. And, you know, we've got a veteran quarterback and we'll just see what happens. And by the way, we've got this David Johnson already. So to me, I'm like, that's actually makes me like Bruce Arians more, and I already liked him.
I like it. I like it a lot. Andre Ellington, to me too, is when we saw him in a more feature type role, obviously a little bit more injury prone, but he's got a little wiggle to his game. No, MG?
Sure. I still don't know what I'm going to do with this. You know, I mean, it's a crowded and somewhat unpredictable wide receiver group already. I mean, we've been kicking dirt on Larry Fitzgerald's grave for a couple of years. And he keeps Beatrix kiddoing his way like out of there and stuff. Like, you know, there's him. You know, we're expecting hopefully the resurrection of John Brown this year.
Yeah.
J.J. Nelson put some nice things on tape at the end of the season. I mean, it is a very crowded wide receiver group, and now you're trying to take a converted running back and put him there. I mean, he could certainly make some nice plays for you, but I don't expect enough from him that I would even consider drafting him. He's a waiver wire guy at best.
All right, so Andy Reid wants to get Tyreek Hill more involved in the offense as well. Per Adam Teicher of ESPN, Hill played on less than 40% of KC's plays last year. Of Hill's 401 snaps, 207 came as a wide receiver, 163 as a slot receiver, and 31 out of the backfield. Your thoughts there, MG?
So this means Tyreek Hill is going to be the new Jamaal Charles? In that he's going to be the guy that it's like, oh, hey, yeah, maybe we should have gotten him the ball more this year.
There is a theme here, by the way. Can you tell in this podcast? It's just positional madness.
It's
running backs. What? Who is what? We don't know.
No idea. And I guess, you know, I don't know. Is this the way of skill position players now in the
is
NFL?
It? That's it's kind of an interesting question, is it not?
Right. I mean, you know, I mean, last year we got to the point where obviously Tevin Coleman was kind of a Swiss Army knife in Atlanta. David Johnson did a little bit of everything in Arizona. I mean, they lined him up out wide on occasion. We've seen Lev Bell do it. You know,
we hear about Andre Ellington.
Hear about Andre Ellington,
Hill,
Ty Montgomery.
If we want to
go back digging in the crates, I mean, we can go back to Tavon Austin and the fact that he had almost as many rushing yards as receiving yards a couple of seasons ago.
Good point.
So I don't know. I guess this is just the way of things. But yeah, I mean, hey, it'd be great if Tyreek Hill gets more involved in the offense. Jamaal Charles obviously is gone.
Yeah.
Spencer Ware is probably going to dominate that backfield. The Chiefs' passing game continues to be, you know, non-fat plain yogurt. It's just there. So, you know, I guess it's a good thing, but I do feel like it's going to be one of those situations where they want to get Tyreek Hill involved, and then they'll go a game where he gets, like, you know, two touches, and afterwards Andy Reid in his press conference will say, yeah, I don't know, I guess we probably should have done more to get Tyreek the ball.
That sounds very Andy Reid-ish.
<You know?
laughs> Why does it? That is so true,
right?
It's like Jamaal Charles just running. He'll rack up 200 total yards in week 12, week 13, and gets three touches. Andy Reid goes up to the press conference,
like, oh,
yeah,
man.
You know, I'm looking at this box score, guys. You know, yeah, you know, I guess Jamaal should have got a couple.
I guess he should have got the. I mean, here's the thing: you never hear Mike Tomlin say, "Man, we couldn't get you know, you just
or
never
David
hear
Johnson,
right? Like you just right. You have Bruce Arians out here saying that David Johnson's still too young to be overworked. Like that's where they are in Arizona.
Yeah. That's a good, very good point. Tim Hightower, man, there's a lot of running back news. Tim Hightower signed with San Francisco. I'll ask you this. Is Carlos Hyde in a potential committee situation with not only Tim Hightower but DeJuan Harris as well, who the team also signed? I don't know, man. I like the upside and the talent ability of Carlos Hyde, but the situation right now, I'm a little worried.
I'm not.
No?
Not really. I mean, this is Carlos Hyde's job, at least at the running back spot. Now, maybe with Kyle Shanahan there in San Francisco, they may want to do some different things with, you know, Hightower or Harris or something like that. But I still think, I mean, look, they still don't have a lot. I mean, you know, Pierre Garçon was a nice pickup for them. But
who the hell's their quarterback?
Brian Hoyer at the moment.
I mean,
unless Matt Barkley rises up and you know, takes that gig away from him, fight on.
Man.
But right now Carlos Hyde is, I think, the closest thing they have to a centerpiece in that offense.
Okay.
So as long as he's healthy, I'm not really worried about his touches.
Tom Brady says he can play another 5 years. Drew Brees says he could play until 45. How old is Tom Brady? 37, 38?
40, isn't he?
Is he 40?
He will play at 40.
He will be 40 this
So
year.
He could play until 45. So Drew Brees says he could play until 45. Mike McCarthy says Aaron Rodgers can play just as long as Tom Brady.
Okay.
Philip Rivers says he won't be around forever, quote unquote. What does that mean? Probably 45.
I mean,
why? I don't. What is this whole age thing? With,
I think
with
this
quarterbacks
means that
now?
45 is the new 38. That's what I think it means.
It's like everyone wants to know how long these quarterbacks are going to play now. It's just, it's baffling. I don't understand. Tom Brady's going to play until 40. Drew Brees 45. Aaron Rodgers, great. I don't. Okay, whatever.
Well, here's my question. What about guys who are like Carson Palmer? So you're not necessarily – because, like, no one's going to tell Tom Brady when to retire. No one's going to be
Carson
like,
Palmer's
hey.
Leg will fall off by 45.
No, but, like what – like, we can agree that the names on this list are elite.
Yes.
Right?
Yep.
And then you can say that there's, like, a step down. I mean, look, Carson Palmer's a good quarterback. I'm just not calling him
elite.
Same
he's
level.
He's not elite. No, he is fine.
So – but he's better than – would you rather him or would you rather an unknown entity in this year's draft class?
Oh, no. I'm sure that for all the teams involved, yeah. I mean, the Patriots, the Saints, the Packers, they want these guys to hold on as long as possible, especially if they continue to play anywhere near the level they're playing right now.
True.
I mean,
80% Drew Brees is still better than, you know, a lot of these incoming quarterbacks over the next 5 years.
But even, like, to me, get a guy to, like – get someone for Drew Brees' replacement, do the whole, you know, Brett Favre, Aaron Rodgers situation, then you have yourself a pretty nice
situation.
I mean,
right.
I think it's one thing to also say that you want to play that long.
I would say that too. It's good for your contract.
It's good for your contract. It's good for your brand. And look, and I say this as someone who has never taken a hit on an NFL field, but just seeing the way,
I can confirm.
Just seeing the way, for instance, that Brett Favre's career ended and just kind of that sense from him that, yeah, you know, after a while, you do reach an age where taking those hits and trying to not only get up within the course of the game, but getting out of bed on a Tuesday or, you know, trying to get ready for a game that following week, it gets harder. I mean, that's just – it's a fact. Look, we joke around and say Father Time is undefeated, but, I mean, that's real. That is really real.
You know, it is interesting, though, because Tom Brady doesn't take a lot of hits. Drew Brees doesn't take a lot of hits. Aaron Rodgers doesn't take a lot of hits. Philip Rivers gets hit a lot.
He does.
And he's the guy that says that – I'm not going to be around forever.
Also, Philip Rivers has, what, 8 kids? I mean,
that's like, true.
I think nine, actually.
I think he's like nine.
Like, at some point, like, you know. I mean,
I want to know where he's going to live in L.A. with 9 kids. That's what I want to know.
I don't know.
It ain't going to be Manhattan Beach, let me tell you.
No.
Is he going to live in Riverside?
That's a hell of a commute.
Is this dude going to be living in Ontario?
That's a hell of a commute. I don't know. I can see.
He's going to rock the 909, though. Come on. We know this, right?
You imagine Phil Rivers in the IE, huh?
I think so. I think that's his speed, first of all.
Rancho Cucamonga?
like
Upland? You know?
Upland?
These are things I have no knowledge
of. Etowanda? Like, where's he going to be?
Etowanda, I love it. Is he going to live in the Valley or is he going to live in the IE?
I mean, like, James, you can speak to. I mean, what's life
Chino.
Like? What's life like in Diamond Bar? I mean, can he go? Can he go chill there?
He can't. I mean, I guess he could live in. You know what? That would be. That's an interesting
Hacienda. Point. Hacienda Heights. Maybe?
No, there's too many Chinese folks in Hacienda Heights. I think
that's it.
I'm just saying, bro. I'm just saying.
I don't even know what that means.
I don't even know what that means either.
Listen,
I'm very
bro,
confused.
Like, he needs a country style lifestyle.
Gotcha.
That's what he needs.
All right.
He needs cowboy hats. He needs some farm folks around him.
So then Fontana.
I think Fontana would be a fine choice for him.
There you go.
There you go.
I'm sure about.
But I think
85% of our listeners have no idea what we're talking about right
now. Actually, 33% of this podcast has no idea what you're talking about right now. I watched the OC, and that's why I suggest Kino. But that was about all I could add to that.
Diamond Bar, which is where my family is from, is right next to Chino. So when OC came out and they were disparaging Chino, we all felt very disparaged as well.
you were disparaged by association.
Because you were Chino adjacent, you felt as though you were
Diamond Bar's Diamond Bar High School's direct rival is in Chino.
I would just like to add something here. I think we all could be wrong because I just received intel that Rivers actually has a Mercedes spinner van.
Wow.
A spinner van?
Wow.
Well, it doesn't surprise me that he has a van. That makes a lot of sense. When you got nine kids.
You have nine kids. You
got to rock a van.
an
SUV's not going to cut it. You got to get the van.
You just got to buckle down and get the van.
Okay.
Maybe they just all stay down in San Diego and he like takes a helicopter.
That's actually, I think, pretty plausible.
Oh, that could be a decent. Okay. That might be some. We're talking about this way too much.
Yes, we are.
All right. Let's
I don't know.
We go from talking about aging quarterbacks to talking to the late round QB. Let's go to the phone. All right, we got on the horn JJ Zacharyson at Late Round QB. You could find his work on NumberFire. You could find his work in a lot of different places. But JJ, welcome to the program, man.
Thanks for having me.
Hey, listen, we'll start you off. You wrote a great piece on Tony Romo. Fill the listeners in. Overrated, underrated, undervalued. What are your thoughts on Tony Romo?
Look, man, I think that he is the most underrated player, not just of the last few years, but of this era.
And the
reason for it, I mean, he's absurdly efficient. You know, even, you know, this isn't adjusting for era necessarily, but since the merger, we've had 182 quarterbacks throw the ball 1,000 or more times in their career. And Tony Romo ranks fourth in adjusted net yards per attempt. He's third in touchdown rate. He basically only trails Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady, and Peyton Manning in every efficiency metric.
Wow.
But I think that the big thing for Romo that why he gets such a tough time and why people think that he's not clutch is because of that 2007 wildcard game against the Seahawks, obviously, with him fumbling the ball and then not being able to kick the field goal. But if you look at what he's done in the fourth quarter specifically throughout his career, since he became starter in 2006, no player in football has a higher yards per attempt average than Tony Romo in the fourth quarter. He's second in completion percentage, second in quarterback rating in the fourth quarter. And even if you look at only what happens in the final 5 minutes of the game, so those really high leverage situations,
right,
Tony Romo is fourth in yards per attempt, fourth in quarterback rating, second in completion percentage. So basically, you can take that narrative, throw it in the trash. Tony Romo, unbelievably underrated.
Here's the thing, JJ. Not that I necessarily totally disagree with that, but I feel like we're apologizing for some of the, I mean, just there are back-breaking moments that he's had in the fourth quarter. And I feel like this is a narrative that we've heard a lot with Peyton Manning as well, whereas the eyeball test for a lot of folks feels like, look, Peyton Manning, late game, not great. But the numbers would suggest otherwise. And I feel this feels a lot like that with Tony Romo. Am I wrong in saying that?
No, I don't think you're wrong at all. I think that one thing that we do as fans and as humans even is that we just pay attention to these awful moments way more than we pay attention to the good moments.
Okay.
Tony Romo made a ton of comebacks. That's the other thing, too. If you look at fourth quarter comebacks, you know, a lot of times people will look at them from a cumulative sense and they'll say, Tony Romo ranks 14th all-time in fourth quarter comebacks. But that doesn't really tell us everything because we don't know how many opportunities he had to come back in the fourth quarter. So if you look at fourth quarter comebacks divided by those opportunities, Tony Romo actually, among active quarterbacks, ranks sixth best in coming back in the fourth quarter.
That's not bad.
So, and that's better than guys like Aaron Rodgers, like even a Drew Brees or a Matt Ryan. So Tony Romo's right there with those guys in those high-leverage situations, but he just doesn't get the credit for it.
Well, JJ, because I am always seeking validation, I got to ask you about Rex Burkhead, because I know you love him the way that I love him. But I am concerned about him being in what is, at least for the moment, a pretty crowded New England backfield. I mean, you know, Deion Lewis is still there. James White is still there. Is there a level of confidence that he could get enough work with those other guys there that he has the kind of season I think we all hope he can?
Yeah, you know, I'm less worried about James White just because we kind of know what he does as catch footballs really well. You know, he was in the Super Bowl late in the game because they were in that negative game script. Deion Lewis, who knows what's going to happen with him and his health? Seems like it's just a roller coaster ride at this point. Right now, as where we stand, I think Rex Burkhead has a lot of opportunity in store for him on those early downs. And really, he's not a bad pass catcher either, so he could be a potential three-down back. The problem that I see, obviously, is that it's April right now, and it wouldn't be surprising if they do bring someone in, if they get LeGarrette Blount back or if Adrian Peterson ends up signing there. But right now, as it stands, it's very difficult to not be excited for a guy who's going to see early down work in an offense where their lead running back just scored 18 touchdowns.
All right, J.J. Zacharyson, editor-in-chief at Number Fire. You talk about five guys that whose stock has risen considerably since free agency. You put Rex Burkhead on that list. On the flip side of that coin, you also wrote five players whose stock has fallen since free agency began. Brandon Cooks was one of the guys on that list, one of the five biggest losers in fantasy after free agency. I'm a little bit surprised by that. There's not a drop off in quarterback play, and it seems to me like he becomes at least the number one wide receiver there in New England. No.
Yeah, I mean, I think that he's still going to be a guy that's going to be targeted a good bit. But I think that the one thing we have to remember is that New England's pass catching situation is a little bit more crowded than what he had in New Orleans. So even if his market share, let's just say his market share in the offense stays relatively similar to what he saw in New Orleans, because New Orleans does love to spread the ball around.
Right.
The difference is, though, is that New England doesn't throw the ball as much as New Orleans does. So to me, if you break it down and you look at how many targets or what the market share from Julian Edelman's going to be or Rob Gronkowski, and you bring it all together, and the fact that New England uses their running backs out of the backfield so much, that's a really big key as well. It's very easy to see that he could have a very similar market share going to New England, even if it ups 1 or 2%. It's not going to be significant enough for him to really see a crazy amount of more targets than what he saw in New Orleans, because New Orleans does throw the ball so much. And then the other side of this, too, that I think is being ignored a bit, is that in New England, they have a lot of good red zone weapons. They have the best red zone weapon of all time in Rob Gronkowski. So if Gronk is healthy, I do think that's going to hurt, naturally, Brandon Cook's touchdown upside. So I don't think that it's necessarily a terrible, terrible move for Cooks. I mean, you can definitely find many worse situations than playing with Tom Brady, but I do think that he had a near ideal situation in New Orleans.
I know, you know, part of what you guys do, one of the podcasts you are on, which I enjoy immensely, is Living the Stream, you and Denny. And obviously you guys talk a lot about streaming tight ends, but as I look at this tight end group now, obviously Martellus Bennett going to Green Bay is a big deal. You mentioned Gronk still there in New England. And in theory, we've got a class of tight ends coming in that could be really good. Mention, I include Hunter Henry, who had a really good rookie year.
Jack Doyle, baby!
Jack Doyle. Are we past the point of needing to stream tight ends, or is this still going to be part of our universe for a while?
Yeah, I mean, bottom line is that, I'm going to draft my tight ends late just because of the supply and demand formula, where you're only starting one of them, and there's only 12 teams in your leagues. There's going to be an excess of tight ends out there. I do think that the tight end group this year is going to be stronger than what we saw last year, for sure. Hopefully there's not as many injuries as well. And as a result of that, if I can get a guy in the 11th or 12th round that I can then plug and play each week, sure, I'm definitely going to be into that. That's really the goal with streaming, too, is to try to get those plug-and-play guys that you can just play each and every week rather than kind of playing the guessing game and hoping that those guys that a streamer finds the end zone. Because of all the four positions in fantasy football, tight end is easily the toughest to predict week to week.
All right, so give me a guy like Matt Ryan for 2017. He's a good – and this is what I said last year was – I don't think that we should have been that surprised that Matt Ryan broke through, because, again, he was playing in a high-octane offense that threw a lot, and Matt Ryan himself, a talented guy. Can you give me a guy like Matt Ryan in 2017, a good real-life player that finally breaks through in fantasy?
Yeah, so one of the big things why I was into Matt Ryan last year, for instance, trust me, I missed a lot of guys, but I was on Matt Ryan.
Atta baby.
A big reason for it, though, was because he threw a touchdown on only 3.4% of his passes in 2015, whereas from 2000 to 2016, so since the turn of the century, quarterbacks have usually hovered around that 4.5% touchdown rate. So if you look at quarterbacks and their touchdown rates year to year, usually they'll regress back to that 4.5% number.
Interesting.
And that's what we saw from Matt Ryan. Not only did he play better, but his touchdown rate jumped to 7.1%, which is absurdly good. Almost twice as good as what he saw, or over twice as good as he saw the previous season. I think there's two answers to this. If you're looking for kind of a mid-round, maybe, not necessarily a late-round guy as late as Matt Ryan went, if you're looking strictly at this touchdown or this touchdown rate formula, I think that Russell Wilson is one that you should definitely be targeting. He had just the 3.8% touchdown rate last year after a 7% one the year before, and he's also seen volume increase every year, which means if he does see an increase in touchdown rate and he sees more volume, then that means he's going to throw more touchdowns. But I think from a late-round quarterback standpoint, Andy Dalton's one who really jumps out to me. He had a 3.2% touchdown rate this past year, and people forget that in 2015, he was kind of a monster. He had 9 top 12 weekly performances in 13 games. Only 2 players, Tom Brady and Blake Bortles, had more than Andy Dalton did. In 2015, his touchdown rate rose to 6.5%, which is partially why that drop happened this past year. But look, there's a chance that the Bengals aren't that good or as good this year, especially defensively, which could lead to more negative scripts, which could lead to more passing. And if they stay healthy, especially if A.J. Green stays healthy, I could see Andy Dalton kind of making that jump and being more relevant in fantasy this year.
I love the fact that Blake Bortles somehow got into the conversation with good quarterbacks. This is amazing.
Unbelievable.
You know, I this is not a fantasy question, but JJ, you made the Jeff Fisher gif such a big part of your brand and your life, and it is no longer there. Have you figured out who's going to fill that empty hole in your Twitter life? And if you haven't had a name, may I suggest Ben McAdoo to you?
Ben McAdoo would be a great one. He's got the look for sure. He's got the dad look down. I think that he would be fantastic. I've been kind of interested in Bill O'Brien as well. But O'Brien also, if he wasn't in the division that he was in, he wouldn't have been making the playoffs the last few years. And I think that Bill O'Brien is kind of borderline there as well. But McAdoo could be a very, very good gifable coach.
It's mostly because, if you talk about Jeff Fisher, it's the semi-confused, semi-self-content look. And I think McAdoo has that as well. All right, we'll stay with the Rams. Bro, I got to ask you a real, real heart-to-heart question here, brother. Why do you hate Jared Goff?
I'm a big proponent and believer that you find a lot out about a quarterback the instant he starts playing quarterback.
It's been a half a season, man.
Very rarely do you see a quarterback with somewhat of a significant sample size when they're young and a rookie, and very rarely do you see them all of a sudden become good. I mean, you can look back in history. Derek Carr is one where he kind of struggled from an advanced analytics standpoint. His rookie season turned things around. But, if you look back in history, it's really like Drew Brees and Alex Smith as two guys who really changed things and turned things around after somewhat struggles earlier in their careers, and both of those guys needed a change in environment in order to let that happen. So for me with Jared Goff, he was one of the worst quarterbacks that our databases have ever seen this past year, which definitely plays into the idea that I just don't have a lot of optimism in him moving forward.
Oh, man, that is just depressing. What about Peyton Manning, his rookie year? He had a horrendous rookie year, no?
Yeah, I mean, it was a different, it's a different times. If you were to compare his numbers to Jared Goff's, I'm sure that it would look more similar than it should. But, that was back in 98 or whatever. So
there you go. Jared Goff is the next Peyton Manning. Boom. I love it.
That's right. Perfect. We can finish that one there.
There you go. Okay, so why the Twitter handle, by the way? You're the editor-in-chief of Number Fire, but your Twitter handle is Late Round QB. Why the Twitter handle?
Yeah, so, 5 or so years ago, I wrote an ebook called The Late Round Quarterback, and just kind of telling people why you should be drafting quarterbacks late. And that happened right after that crazy, crazy year with Aaron Rodgers and Matthew Stafford, and everyone just started wanting to draft their quarterbacks early. But really, it's a strategy that doesn't fluctuate year to year because of the supply and demand side of fantasy football. So I just went with it, and I just kept the handle, and now the late round quarterback is kind of, I'll go to a conference or something and they'll say, oh yeah, you're the late round quarterback.
There it is.
It just kind of stuck. So I left the handle as is.
Hashtag brand. I like it. Hey, Franchise is working with you guys over at Number Fire a little bit. I want to know how much of a pain in the ass he is for you.
The biggest. No, he's great. I love Franchise.
All right, great. Hey, I know you got a new project here as well. You've got your podcast that you've been doing for a while, Living the Stream, but you got a new project. Do you want to fill us in on that as well?
Yeah, so Number Fire, we just launched the Number Fire Podcast Network, so you can get stuff for every sport. We cover all sports, but I'm specifically doing a podcast called the Late Round Podcast, where I'm looking at specific topics on each show, and I'm bringing in kind of thought leaders or guests on those shows to talk through those specific topics. So
okay.
the first episode we did one with Evan Silva, talked about the running back landscape, and then the one coming out very shortly is with the NFL.com's own Matt Harmon.
Yeah, buddy.
Player charting and reception perception, but it's a great time. Really enjoy it.
So basically, they're like fantasy TED talks.
Yes, yeah, yeah. I mean, I rant a little bit at the beginning and talk about things that I probably shouldn't talk about, but it's a good time.
Jason Zacharyson, find his work at Number Fire. Find his work on Twitter at Late Round QB. Thanks, man. I appreciate your time.
Appreciate it.
All right, Cynthia Freeland, analytics expert. You heard some of the stuff that J.J. Zacharyson, the knowledge that he was spitting there. What were your takeaways in regards to, you know, somebody like Rex Burkhead?
So I love J.J. I think his work's amazing. And it's always fascinating because he's kind of like, because he's like in it so deep all the time, I'm always like, that's great. That's great. Like, I'm just sitting there like in awe. I think if you factor in the Bengals schedule and you look at kind of some of the stuff he was talking about, Andy Dalton too, that schedule for Cincinnati is very favorable. So I think that's a great one that he pointed out there. I mean, I think they do have, I mean, I don't know. If you just look at the opponent's ease of schedule, they're what, fourth easiest schedule? So
right.
Strength of schedule. So that's something to keep
in mind. So Andy Dalton does seem like he could bounce back and have a pretty good year.
Yes. I mean, he's in the position too.
I'd love to get your thoughts on Brandon Cooks, though. So, he goes from New Orleans. He goes to New England now. And to me, I don't know, the upside for Brandon Cooks going to a Patriots offense where – they're able to effectively get the ball downfield, and he is one of the best field stretchers in the game. It seems to me like the upside certainly is enticing for Brandon Cooks, but again, JJ says Brandon Cooks is one of the five biggest losers in fantasy after free agency.
I'm totally with him. Drew Brees threw the ball 673 times last season. I know Tom Brady didn't play as many games, but I think he's like 470 or something like that. And then you have factor in the four games that he missed. That doesn't map to any, like, that still maps to, like, you know, something like 625. Like, there's, or 600, not even, right? Like, there's not a lot of quarterbacks who throw over 600. Last
right.
one, two, th- like six or seven. So you're just, the volume is a huge deterrent in general. Plus, who knows who the red zone target's going to be. So if you're looking for those extra touchdown upside, like, it's totally, there's going to be one game where Brandon Cooks is going to score three touchdowns. I mean, maybe not three, but there's going to be
probably
one
maybe.
Game.
Possibly three.
Right, where I'm going to, like, and I'm going to totally eat my words on this, but, yeah. You know, I don't think the consistency there, I totally agree with him.
I also do wonder about Brandon Cooks. You know, part of the story with him last year was when things weren't going his way or he wasn't getting the balls much. He wasn't happy about it, and he made his feelings known.
That's look, interesting.
That doesn't seem like the Patriot way.
Look, you know, exactly. I mean, one, it's not the Patriot way, but also there's a really good chance that there will be weeks when you're not seeing a lot of targets. I mean, as long as Rob Gronkowski is walking this earth, he's going to be Tom Brady's favorite target. Right. And you know, you throw in guys like you know, Malcolm Mitchell, who really has the potential to take off this year.
Julian Edelman
is still alive.
All the running backs are still there.
So many guys that can catch the ball out of the backfield. We talked about Rex Burkhead and Deion Lewis. I mean, there's a really good chance that Brandon Cooks isn't going to see the kind of volume that he wants, and how does he react to that? I mean, does he make a stink about it? Does Tom Brady basically tell him to STFU and get out there and play? I mean, like, how is this going to play out?
Yeah, I mean, what's his – I'm looking up his height right now. He's not very tall.
Like, no.
It's not this jump ball situation. Like, you're still going Gronk in the end zone.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't you? Right.
Well, it's to me a question of course, when he scores, it's going to be from 15 yards out or more.
Right.
Right. It's going to be very few situations where it's
5'9" 6", 5'0" 9'6". Not even 5'10".
5'9" and yeah. No. So and again, he's never been an elite, you know, goal to go type receiver. I get that, but I mean, look, I'm not comparing him to. Yes, you know what? Forget it. I'm comparing him to Randy Moss. And I just,
which is that's a no.
Okay, look,
wow,
not going there.
I'm just saying. Look, is he? No, I'm not saying he's Randy Moss, guys. All I'm saying,
okay, good.
Is the role that he fills as a straight up downfield guy. We've seen success there before, and I think fantasy fans will remember that. That's all I'm saying about Brandon Cook. I don't know. To be honest with you, I don't know what his draft price will be. If it gets up into fifth round, I'm not buying. There's a 0% chance I would buy.
I don't see that happening.
I don't see that happening either. But let's say he gets down to like 8 or 9. You won't buy that?
I'd be super
enticed at 8 or 9.
Absolutely. At 8 or 9, I can get down with that. In the fifth round, no way.
Yeah. Right. Right.
But Patriots receivers always frighten me.
Okay.
They just do.
That one to me is like, you know, if you're able to change it every week and get him, then great.
Right.
But like, once you figure out the script. But if you know that script, then chances are, you know.
Somebody else will.
Well, my guess is probably that if you are lucky enough to pick him on the 1 week where he does where it is right. the Brandon Cooks week, then you win.
You win.
You got to
follow this through.
And then flip that for a trade. Right. Flip it for a trade. I love it. All right, let's get to our daily daps.
Extra, read all about it.
This is the daily
daps and hugs. Give me daps because I be scribbling right.
Give me dapping up daps about daps.
All right, daily dap time. Let's start with my guy, MG, Marcus Grant. What's up?
A couple of things. One, I mentioned the S-Town podcast last week.
You did?
On this show, and I finished it, and it was incredible. It does not go where you expect it to go. The ending kind of takes a left turn from where you thought it might potentially go at the start, but was still really just an incredible piece of storytelling. I say that as a person who sort of has a weird thing about radio dramas that in the sense that I love them, even though the genre of that died out decades before I was even born. I just kind of love the concept and the idea of it, and I felt like this really...
Americana, bro.
Even though it was, you know, a real-life story, talking to real-life people, it just very much had that feel of a great radio drama. So,
cool.
Again, I completely recommend it. All 7 episodes are out now. You can go and binge listen to that, so go do that. The other one is... Rick and Morty is back, y'all. At least for one episode. They did a weird thing where the season three premiere came out on April 1st, Saturday, on April Fool's Day. And it picks up where season two left off. For those of you who watch the show, you know Rick Sanchez was in intergalactic space prison. And so it basically picks up from there.
But it's a giant April Fool's joke?
Well, no. The premiere actually premiered. But now... the rest of the season doesn't come until sometime this summer. So they kind of wet our whistle with that and got us all excited about Rick and Morty coming back.
Wow.
Adult Swim did a whole marathon showing the whole first 2 seasons of the show, then the premiere.
Wow.
And now we have to wait
until the summer.
Till the summer.
That's cruel.
Wubba lubba dub dub. But it's
that
back,
is,
y'all.
That is cruel, man. All right. I've got a few here. I will daily dap the show Legion on FX. Holy good God. That's a great show. Go watch it. A couple of Google searches for you. Fresno Mermaid. Go look that up. That's an actual thing.
Is it actually in Fresno?
It's actually in Fresno. There is a woman that was found nearly naked with webbed feet and just drenched in water claiming she is a mermaid. That is a legit thing.
Okay, so I'm Googling it right now. But as an aside, just to interrupt you here briefly,
yes.
I have a very good friend who once worked for NOAA, the National Oceanic and...
something or other.
Something.
N-O-A-A. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. One of his jobs one day was to actually write a press release saying that NOAA disavows the knowledge of actual mermaids.
Right, because of that mockumentary.
Because that mockumentary thing. So he had to write. That was his job for a day, to write a press release and send it out saying that NOAA disavows any. So I may actually have to email or text him this article to see if he wants to retract his statement.
I do like it. There was a girl found. It's like a movie. It's a movie story, man. A girl was found sopping wet with webbed feet claiming she's a mermaid. And they asked her where she's from. She said she's from the ocean.
That's unfortunate for her with the webbed feet.
I mean, but that's a real thing. Like, there are people out there who actually have webbed
feet. I hear what you're saying, bro.
That's unfortunate for her.
I'm just saying, go Google the story.
It is
interesting. I can't wait for somebody to do a good, you know, piece on this, because this is definitely worth a deeper look, no doubt about it. By the way, there's a program called The Nightly Show. Go Google this as well. Daily daps to The Nightly Show for giving us John Legend singing Gordon Ramsay insults. One of the best was, you put so much oil on this, the U.S. wanted to invade the plate.
Wow.
That's
damn.
That's incredible.
You have to Google this.
Damn.
It is. It's wonderful. Just Google John Legend sings Gordon and Ramsay, and you will find it there. All right, Cynthia Freeland, kick us out of here, man.
Okay, so I'm going to not say his last name correctly, but there's a teenager in Arizona.
Yes.
He had quite possibly the best amazing prom proposal.
Okay.
Absolutely. I mean, he's asking Emma Stone.
Yep.
So, and his name is, I believe it's Jacob Stoudemire.
Okay.
He recreated La La Land.
What?
He rewrote the words. He's 17 years old. You have to Google this. It's so cute. He rewrote the lyrics to Another Day of Sun, and then he basically made all of his friends be extras, and it's this incredibly, like...
This is to get Emma Stone?
Yeah, to he said he wants to ask Emma Stone to prom, and he's recreating the opening scene from La La Land. It's so stinking cute. You have to go. And if he doesn't,
if Emma Stone doesn't say yes.
I think I'm not really sure if she's as of right now, right here in this moment when we're taping this. She has not yet responded, but I'm pretty sure that she needs to.
So here's how I feel about promposals. On the one hand, I feel like it sort of puts the celebrity in an awkward situation.
100%.
Where if you say no, you seem like a jerk.
Of course.
But on the other hand, if I was in high school, I would have totally recreated the Rhythm Nation video to get Janet Jackson to go to the prom with her. So
is that the hands one?
Yeah. So my friend bought me a poster of that, and
Rhythm
Dance
Nation
poster?
Is
I used to do choreographed dance. I was like teach myself the choreographed dances to music videos, so like just in case I ever needed it. That wasn't one of them, but
I feel like that poster would be if you ever were in Shawshank. If Marcus Grant,
that's the poster I'd
Tim
have on
Robbins,
the wall.
That would be the poster.
I would have a big tunnel that I dug out with a spoon and a rock hammer
behind
the Jan Jackson hands poster.
Right. Yep.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
That makes sense.
All right. Great. What a way to end the show.
Going out with a bang.
Hey, by
also,
the way,
do listeners know that you have a tattoo?
I don't think they do.
I mean,
they
you're
do,
kind
they
of
do now.
You're kind of an unexpected inked guy.
They do now.
Like, I think that should have been my dap. Had I known that ahead of time, I would have written something and probably had a musical number to perform to it. But I did not realize that you had some ink. And now everybody knows. I just exposed you for being way cooler than anyone even thought.
We
thought you were here, and you're really way up here.
I have a giant... left shoulder lion tattoo. That's actually true.
And you have a really cool scar on your forearm. You're like low key tough. Low key tough.
And we've never talked about that on the podcast.
Oh, well, now we have.
And no, I don't think listeners or viewers who have seen me on NFL Fantasy Live know that I sport a little bit of ink. I have to tell
glad I could pull my weight today.
Little known secret, James Coe actually was an extra in a high school production of The Warriors.
Good God. I have to, by the way, this is a good I have to tell my 3-year-old daughter, she doesn't understand the whole concept of tattoos. So she said, Appa, why do you have a stamp on your arm?
Pretty smart, actually.
And she's like, where did you get the stamp? Did you get it from the stamp store? I was like, yes,
kinda.
I did.
Did she ask?
It's actually pretty – you might have a brilliant daughter on your
Did she ask if she could get a stamp of her own from the stamp store?
She did, but we don't – she doesn't know about it.
There are no stamp stores for kids just yet.
Yeah, exactly.
Not yet.
Not yet.
Wow, what a way to close the show.
I'm glad I could pull my weight. I'm glad I could add something.
That's the show for Cynthia Freeland, exposing all my deepest, darkest secrets. For MG, my guy, Marcus Grant, and of course, Ryan Bartlett behind the glass. I'm James Coe. We're out.